And so it begins. This is a morning about perception, about how each of us views the world, about things so basic to who we are that we often don't recognize their impact on us. Our chalice lighting starts with the drum, representing the one universal, the heart which beats within us all. It is morning. The heart beats, the sun rises, the world comes into view. It is a time of beginnings. Each, in our own way, we see creation over again. The Navajo ancient steps from his traditional hogan facing east. He gives thanks. He scatters corn pollen. He remembers how it all began. When first man was made in the east from the meeting of the black and the white clouds, and first woman was made in the west from the meeting of the yellow and blue clouds.
His holy neighbor imagines the ancestors who emerged from the lower world to the upper world in the area we now call the Grand Canyon. Here the mockingbird Gaba greeted each emerging human by naming their tribal identity. You shall be Supa, and you shall speak Supa language. You shall be Paiute. You shall be Homa.
As the morning sun moves across the Pacific, ancient Polynesian people remembered how they were born. They imagined a world that began in infinite, formless, black nothingness, from which emerged a thought, an intelligence that broods over the immensity of time and space, and in the darkness creates the womb of the Earth Mother, then creates the light of the Sky Father. In the embrace of male light and female darkness, the universe was given form and life in the great gods and goddesses.
While elsewhere, others believe that in the beginning, the world was a female sea, all life forms floating in the womb-like environment of the planetary ocean, nourished and protected by its fluid chemicals, rocked by the lunar tidal rhythms. This is a world in which the original black goddess was bisexual, the instrument of her own fertility. An ancient witch. She carried a snake in her belly.
Our world, our day, this day, here at UUFBR, begins like all of those others, with a view of the world. Like all other worldviews, it is born of our efforts to make sense of it all, to affirm at our deepest core who we are and what we believe. We call it a covenant between us. We call it an affirmation. It is our view of who we would want to be in this world. As we join together this morning reading the affirmation printed in your order of service, I invite you to think about it as a view of the world, one that is basic to this place and to us as people here today. Please join me. Love is the doctrine of this faith. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, to the end that all shall grow in harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another. May it be so. The genesis for this morning's service started at a Thanksgiving dinner over 12 years ago. Our then 5-year-old youngest granddaughter discovered her uncle's digital camera while the rest of us relaxed over coffee and conversation. With minimal instruction, she soon mastered peering through the lens with one eye, squinting the other, and clicking merrily away. She immediately checked each shot. Didn't like it, she reshot it till it met approval. Gravely, she photoed the large, stuffed red dog that hung out under our room divider. Two different ones of us, she would call, "Smile," as she scooted around the table. Adults indulgently looked down and smiled while sipping just a little more coffee and eating just a little more pie. Soon, she and her grandfather disappeared into his study, and we heard the printer going as they loaded her pictures into the computer. She returned proudly with a handful of photographs. As I oohed and aahed about each one, I was immensely struck by her perspective of the world. For while the photo of Big Red Dog under the room divider was face to face, the rest of us were a variety of knees and ankles, with an occasional hip overlapping the chair, or an unflattering double chin from below. For she is the one of our granddaughters who does not walk. Born with spina bifida, she learned to scoot around the floor, using her one active leg and pulling the other one along. By age 3, she was fitted with her own little girl size wheelchair, and she quickly learned to do wheelies with the best of them. Then, her view of the world moved from ankles and knees to hips and waistlines. In her stunningly blunt book, Waist High in the World, Life Among the Non-Disabled, wheelchair-bound author Nancy Mayers tells us,
"Waist high also resonates with knee deep. This is no piteously deprived state I'm in down here, but a rich, complicated, and utterly absorbing process of immersion in whatever the world has to offer."
Mayers did not write this as an uplifting, inspirational book. However, she invites the reader to be lowered and steadied into what may be unfamiliar, but is not inhospitable space.
"Sink down beside me, take my hand, and together we'll watch the wastes of the world drift by. What has surprised me is how little self-pity I've felt. Here I was, after all, an attractive young woman of intellectual and artistic promise, with dependent children and a vigorous husband, cut down platitudinously enough in my prime. Here I am now, a quarter of a century later, prime well past, hunched and twisted and powerless, but for 2 12-volt batteries beneath my butt. Woe is me. Except that on the whole, woe isn't me. I simply don't feel especially sorry for myself. Neither do most of the other people with disabilities I know. So I'm neither unusually brave nor exceptionally thick-skinned. Self-pity is simply one of those sentiments more likely to be projected onto one from the outside than generated within. That is, because non-disabled people pity us, they presume that we must also pity ourselves.
In biblical times, physical and mental disorders were thought to signify possession by demons. In fact, Jesus' proficiency at casting out demons accounted for much of his popularity among the common folk. People who were stooped or blind or subject to seizures clearly required fixing, and divine intervention was the only remedy powerful enough to do that job. Theologically, as well as medically, this interpretation of the body in trouble now seems quite primitive. Yet, we still use metaphors in which physical vigor is equated with positive moral qualities. Listen to these. Keep your chin up, we say, signifying courage. Keep your eyes open, meaning alertness. Stand on your own two feet, independence. And tall, pride. Look him straight in the eye, honesty. By contrast, physical debility connotes vice, as in sit on your butt, take it lying down, listen with half an ear, or be without a leg to stand on. These would make it seem that the way in which the body occupies space and the quality of the space it occupies correlate with the condition of the soul. Metaphorically, it is better to be admired as high-minded than looked down on. It is better to be free as a bird than confined to a wheelchair.
Now, the truth is that unless you are squatting or 6 years old, I can never look you straight in the eye. And I spend all my time sitting on my butt, except when I'm taking it lying down. These are the realities of life in a wheelchair. And the fact that the soundness of the body so often serves as a metaphor for its moral health, its deterioration thus implying moral degeneracy, puts me in kind of a quandary. How can I possibly be good? Let's face it, wicked witches are not just ugly as sin, they are also bent and misshapen, crooked. I am bent and misshapen, therefore ugly, therefore wicked, and I have no way to atone. Are there not beautiful sorcerers and handsome scoundrels out there?
The compelling message of this book came back to me earlier this month while I was watching the PBS celebration of the 4th of July, called A Capital Fourth. I watched performers dedicate their songs to the disabled veterans in the audience, bending over to shake the hands of the wheelchair-bound. And I was brought back to Nancy Mayer's description of her worldview from the wheelchair.
I don't think it's the normal's own fault that they lack disabilities to deepen and complicate their understanding of the world. For mine is an alien terrain.
Just as a side note, we debated putting Marjorie up here so you could see her when she spoke, and we didn't, because this congregation has never made this dais accessible. So what is the worldview from this room? Although I, for one, resonate to the rhythm of the old creation stories, I do not share the beliefs of the ancient Navajo, nor the Polynesian, nor do most of us believe the world began with a female sea, that the original black goddess carried a snake in her belly. While it is relatively easy to figure out what most of us do not believe, it is harder, I think, to identify what we as UUFBR We, as a group of covenanting individuals, do share in common belief. The affirmation we said earlier proclaims that the quest for truth is our sacrament. I often wonder, what truth is that? For surely that quest does not take us all to the same place at the same time. Indeed, we probably never all reach the same place. For while the quest for truth is our sacrament, so honoring each person's, each individual's journey to truth must surely be sacramental too. Author and commentator Margot Adler believes that because we see the world through many lenses, there are always many truths. There are always many realities. It was over 40 years ago that I became a Unitarian, although I dabbled with the idea before that. But it felt as if I was embracing a new sense of freedom. I was very excited about leaving behind the traditional Puritanism, which I had inherited from a long line of strong-willed ancestors. I loved sitting with these liberal, open-minded UU folks, exploring the possibilities of new beliefs and of no beliefs at all. I was still in the first blush of embracing this new shared freedom when it came time for Layman's Sunday. Kind of like our summer services here, where a member of the congregation took the pulpit. Then, to my utter amazement, the lay speaker took off with a Bible-based, God-praising, devil-hating, Jesus-loving sermon, which was why I had left the last church we attended. This was certainly not the Unitarianism that I had envisioned. It took a while, and I am ashamed to confess how long a while, for me to have one of those duh moments. You know the kind? Duh, Mary? Duh. You are looking for a place where folks take their own religious journey, where they explore spiritual options from all the world's possibilities, where they can be strong humanists or theists. So why are you so upset that this person's belief is the one that you rejected? Why indeed? Perhaps each of us, cocooned in our own worldview, in our own terrain, to use Nancy Mayer's words, must continually work, continually struggle to accept and to understand, even if not to adopt, the perception, the truth of others. UU minister Victoria Safford tells the story of a Sunday morning when her congregation was singing Amazing Grace from the UU hymnal. Then she says, we got to that bizarre moment, in the first moment when our Unitarian Universalist hymn book slaps down an asterisk and a choice. That is, one may choose which word, which version to sing. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Or, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. She suggests that which you sing on any particular Sunday may depend on how you are feeling when you are presented with the choice. Are you particularly wretched that day, or very soulful? She goes on.
I know of no other hymnal in print that virtually stops the singing in mid-measure to poll the congregation. To call for a theological debate within the mind and heart of every singer. and right there, quickly, because the pianist is not going to wait for you. The congregation isn't going to wait for you. Sunday rolling on its way to Monday isn't going to wait for you. You have to stake your claim, make your mark, testify, all the while wondering if the person singing next to you will take offense if you confess at the top of your voice to your own wretchedness. Or will your neighbor be annoyed or maybe shocked if you stand there warbling on about what a pleasant soul you are, what a nice, well-rounded, fully individuated, sin-free, guilt-free humanist soul. There you stand, frozen in time, and the music plays on while you hastily cobble a theology.
The first time I read that story, I thought, there are times when it's really tough to be a UU. Whether our world is waist high, face high, or sky high, that affirmed quest for truth can be a hard one. Victoria Safford says,
we sing our song in different keys and cadences. We are on our own to make a faith out of nothing, which is to say, out of everything we have. That is daunting, lonely work, demanding, and relentless work. Not everyone wants to stop singing in the middle of a song and consider once again and all alone the nature of the human soul. It's a lot to ask of people on a Sunday morning.
It is a lot to ask. And while the work can be lonely at times, can be demanding and relentless, I believe it is an integral part of who we are as UUs. That is one of the reasons that I love our summer services. I love the variety of presentations, the many voices of belief. These many voices push me to struggle with my own search for whatever truth there may be. They push me to keep my mind as open as I can while digging deeper to understand the worldview of each person who presents. I chose for music today Sweet Honey's haunting rendition of Would You Harbor Me, because I believe that when we are at our very best, that is what we do. We harbor each other with caring, with concern, with thought and love and laughter, as each one of us struggles to cobble together a theology which will sustain us for this day in this world. Please listen with me again to the drum as it reflects the beat of our human hearts. I wanted to add one other thing, which is maybe personal and universal. I have thought a great deal this past week about young men who are shot down unwittingly. I've thought a great deal about what it's like to have white privilege, which I have, and what it's like to always wonder if somebody needs to get your back. That has been a great sorrow. The joy came partly Friday night, watching our president make a speech from the deepest of his heart, which seems to be starting the national conversation. And I guess I don't know that I would say that I have a great joy, but I certainly have more hope than I had 10 days ago. And I would like to think that somewhere in all of this, we as a caring congregation will find our part in that national conversation. Thanks to the rest of you for allowing us to share in your lives. Just as we view the world from different heights and through different lenses, just as we find different truths and different meanings, so we also hold each other in thought and in heart, harboring the very best of who we are and who we can be. Go now in love and in peace. Blessed be.